Welcome to the next episode of Love Vocals Nation. We are here to explore the world of trance music and its most talented artists. Today, we have a very special guest with us. He is a renowned DJ, producer, and label owner who has been pushing the boundaries of trance music for over a decade. And his innovative and emotive sound has earned him a dedicated following of fans around the globe. Known for his high energy performances, captivating melodies, and relentless beats, we are thrilled to welcome to the show the one and the only Sean Tyus. Welcome.
Thank you for having me
welcome
on.
This to is the like show.
It came together number one really quickly. So, yeah.
Hello, Sean.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
And thank you for coming on today.
The accent doesn't sound very Eastern time zone.
No. I'm Scottish.
What are you doing in New York then? Or are you in New York?
No, I'm not. I'm actually about an hour from Detroit.
Ah, no kidding. And it's still an Eastern time zone? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
All right.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
I'm in Dublin. So.
Dublin. We're all Celtish.
Very cool. Nice.
So, how are you, Sean? How are you doing?
Really good. Actually, you caught me in the middle. I'm doing, you can't see it, it's off to the side. Probably it's a good thing. I would look like, I would look very unorganized. I am an unorganized person, but I would look extra unorganized. Like, okay, let me show you. This is all over the floor right
Oh
now.
My wow. Lord. Oh my goodness.
We all have those corners of the room.
Did you do that in a mad moment? Did you go... And sort of
So I'm reorganizing my modular systems and I have to take every piece out one by one. But in order to do that, you have to disconnect everything. So,
all right.
it's actually more work than I expected. I was expecting to just blow through it in an hour and it's no.
Yeah. So,
there's pieces all over the place. It's just, yeah.
That's a real studio, you know.
It's fun. It is kind of like, okay, so I need this piece in that case, but otherwise I can't do this with this. And it's like you're constantly thinking. It's really good problem solving skills. Or I just need more money to buy more shit so that this way, or more stuff. I don't know if you need to censor anything.
No. After we had Kieran McCauley on, there was effing and blinding all over the place. So we're good.
Yeah.
You're good.
Cool.
But it looks like so that's your studio.
Yes.
Yeah. It looks cool.
Oh, it's really, you know what? It was just, here's the weird coincidence. It was completely redone. I did it myself. My wife helped a lot too. In February 2020. Now think of the significance of that date.
Yeah.
That
wow.
month,
yeah,
right yeah, before yeah. the world shut down. And this is where I was banished for basically a year and a half. I was like, holy moly, how did we do the timing on this one so well? So lucky.
So that has been your room during the COVID time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, the COVID project, hey?
Love it.
But without even knowing it.
But maybe it was like you preempted it. You never know.
It really had to be. If you saw the studio in its old sense, I could even probably send you pictures after the interview and you'll be like, that's not the same room.
All right. Yeah, I'd love to see that. Cool.
Thank you.
So, Sean, Antonio mentioned in the intro that you have a huge history of trance and in the trance music industry overall as a producer. You're known for your uplifting sound and banging sound, I would say. Mm. Can you tell us a little bit about your journey into the music production overall? Like, how did you start it as a producer?
I think I actually started first as a producer before I was a DJ. Just tinkering. I mean, back in high school, I would be going with a couple of friends back and forth with something called a tracker. This was like done with like back in before Windows days. Well, actually Windows was around, but it was still running on MS-DOS, so Impulse Tracker 3. And we were doing like demo scene type music. It was goofing around. It wasn't really anything. And it sounded, if I went back and listened to those tracks, it would be absolutely extremely embarrassing. But looking back, but you know, everybody has to start with a hobby that develops, you know? And
yeah, absolutely.
So I guess back when I was in art school, then I started to think about making more music, not on a professional level, I just more as a hobbyist. But then I realized, holy shit, this stuff is expensive. This is before VSTs or anything like that. So you had to buy synths.
Yeah.
And
and it was just like, oh my God. So opened up a bunch of credit cards, maxed them all out, bought a bunch of stuff. You do as a teenager would do.
Yeah.
And just got started to crash course and learning this crazy, crazy world that just doesn't really let you go.
Yeah.
It's addictive, isn't it? Absolutely addictive.
That is amazing. So what age were you when you had your first like official release?
21. That would have been 2001, I think.
Yeah. And did you work hard to get to that point? Like, how was that process overall?
And I'm not even going to say what the name of the track is, though. I'm sure people can discogs it, but it was miserable. I was running it on a Windows computer that couldn't hold a MIDI clock time very accurately. And you'll hear it if you actually have the vinyl somewhere out there. But it felt pretty good. I mean, it's still like, you know, releasing like that, it's like somebody believed in what you did.
And
you're like, okay, so one person liked it at least, or enough to release some vinyl.
Of course.
That's not how I feel every time still. Like at least one person liked it, you know?
You know what? That feeling is, it kind of comes and goes, but you're like, wow, how much longer can I keep fooling everybody that I know what I'm doing?
Yeah.
I think that's called imposter syndrome, actually.
That's exactly what it's called. And it's actually a negative trait, because we nobody's fooling anybody. It's just, you know, you have self-doubt occasionally on a bad day.
Absolutely.
And, oh, man. I like the days where I don't feel any of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think also, you know, especially with this kind of craft, where every day we're putting our soul on the line, you know, there it is. That's how I've always seen it anyway. So
totally. If you have a good day in the studio, I will walk out of here like a 300 Spartan soldier ready to take on the Persian army. And the other days.
No. All right. So what kind of key elements do you look for when in the track, basically, when you're producing trance music?
When I'm producing, right now I'm on this kind of, for the last several years, actually, ever since I had an interest in like bass music and stuff like that as well, I got into sound design. So for me, sound and also if you think back to why you got into dance music in the first place, it probably wasn't the melody that actually got you interested in electronic music. It was the texture, it was the new sounds that you had never heard before that don't exist on real instruments. And so that's what got me into it, and I had kind of forgotten that over time and just got so focused on the MIDI melody and stuff like that. But And then when bass music blew up, when it would be, you know, dubstep, electro, drum and bass, all that stuff, then that reminded me, holy shit, there are insane sounds in dance music that I had forgotten about, and I need to get in my head down and actually really learn how to make new original sounds. And that's kind of the kick that I've been on ever since, and trying to implement that into trance music or into the hybrid stuff that I'm doing.
Yeah, you can really hear that in your music for sure.
Thank you.
And what made you choose trance, like the trance journey? Why trance?
Okay, so what made me choose trance? Okay, so just seeing Paul Van Dyke kill it at Twilo back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And there were religious nights. He would do an eight-hour set at Twilo and then into Roxy when Twilo closed down. And it was just, you know, seeing the dance floor go nuts to one of the most beautiful melodies you've ever heard, and you would never hear again for at least 2 months, because those were the days. No Shazam, none of this garbage. And being left in the dark is an amazing feeling. It's magical. But now somebody could just Shazam every single song in an ID and probably get 95% of them. It takes away a bit of the mystique. So, you know, that magic is what got me into trance. I don't know if I was that age now at a club, would it have been as magical? I don't know.
Okay. Interesting, for sure. So what program are you actually producing in at the moment?
Ableton Live for the past
years.
Same as your brother, I believe. We spoke a lot when I was transitioning from Logic over to Live. And I can't even look at Logic anymore. Sorry, Apple. But
I prefer Ableton myself as well when I'm producing a little
bit. It's quick. It's really direct.
Yeah, it really is. And do you have any favorite VSTs overall?
Oh, many. I guess. Okay, let's take a look. I actually have Live open behind me right now. So, Let me just put your window up here. Let's just see what I mean. Okay, so you know what? I've been, of course, over the last year and a half, I've been a huge fan of Spire because I've been doing banks for them. I did a 4-hour course on Spire on my website. But I, over the course of the time, and then I'm like, you know, whenever I run into a limitation with Spire, I have to use something else. So I've just gotten into Arturia Pigments, which is like really good and very different in so many ways. Serum, of course, Massive is a longtime favorite of mine. Silent is a bread and butter synth. FM8 is still makes its way into almost every single track of mine. Are you referring to specifically synths, I guess, right?
Yeah, no, it's just good to hear like what your preference are if you haven't.
These are just all of them, and I'm really looking forward to the new one coming in the new 11.3 update of Live called Drift, which looks like it's basically a Moog approach. So yeah, that's good. That looks sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorites are Massive. Just always good for bass lines, I think. So
always good for bass lines. Yeah. I mean, it never really, you know, it's made to be a digital synth. It's not necessarily made to sound analog, but it's made to sound aggressive, and it does a good job of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
all right. So
it.
Speaking about like these tease plugins and such, we saw on Twitter like the other day, like music producers revolted against Waves Audio plugin, you know, the app going to subscription scheme overall. And I noticed that you were like one of the activists against this model.
I wonder if that made any difference at all. But I mean, of course.
Well, apparently, you know, they were rethinking, you know, so it's a big revolt. So what's your thoughts around it? And why do you think so many musicians reacted strongly on this?
Number one, I just missed the days where you bought something and you had it physically in your hand. And this harkens back to when music went from physical formats, CD, cassette, vinyl, into digital formats. And it was already like, oh, this kind of sucks. You're not holding any physical form of music. Mm. And now it's, you know, people don't even buy the actual MP3s or Waves anymore. Now it's you're streaming them. And that is now a subscription plan too, just to remind everybody. But just the amount of subscription plans we're going to end up with. If you buy subscriptions for all the things that you're used to owning, we're going to be paying something like $600 or $700 a month, maybe more. Definitely. Depends on how many, because I kind of look at subscription-based plans as that's my entertainment and buy to own as my professional work. Now, having said that, I do subscribe to Adobe CC because I do use this literally every day and I need it. You know, Photoshop and Illustrator are my lifeblood for all my label design stuff. But they don't really have, it's kind of annoying because Adobe's smart. You have to buy like the whole thing or you can buy one thing. You can't make your own little package, which is kind of balls.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. So why do you think other artists reacted so strongly? Is that the reason you think?
Everyone, yo, I mean, being just a producer and not necessarily gigging so much, and gigs right now for trance music are relatively, it's at a low point right now. It's not a really strong start for trance music for 2023. So when everybody's concerned about kind of saving money, yo, they don't like to be told they're about to pay a monthly charge for a plugin that they technically own already. And then they say, oh, you're going to own it until the next update. Waves updates every year.
That is true.
So it's not going to be very long until you're out in the cold and you're stuck with a subscription plan. So they did reverse that decision, and that's cool. Waves is a tough cookie because I mean, like, they are expensive plugins when you start. You know, they're really into the bundles. However, they do great sales all the time. I got to give them credit to that effect. So like, you know, almost every month or every 2 months, you'll see a deal with almost every plugin on their site is $25.
Yeah.
$200 plugins that are $25.
Yeah,
fair enough. I mean, if you need your seventh version of an SSL plugin, it's ready for you.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for that answer.
So, Sean, you've been active in the trance scene now for over a decade. How have you seen the trance scene change, and how do you feel that you have evolved during that time?
Okay. I'm trying to give you the most brief answer on that one because it's like there's so much to say from every angle.
Yeah.
trance scene, and I mean, of course, the whole club scene as well. We've seen, especially in the last 15 years, we've seen a huge transformation from a focus from clubs over to festival attention, really. And club events have a more difficult time getting off the ground. Club brands have a more difficult time getting off the ground than a festival does. People just want to be outside. I don't know if it's necessary. I like the dark club vibe more than the festival. Don't get me wrong. I have fun at festivals, but the club vibe to me is, you know, where it started for me. And I think I see a lot of videos of these techno parties and stuff, and they're in clubs and they're looking insane. So I think it varies from genre to genre. So I'll just try to stick to trance. it's hard because, okay, so where has it changed? The problem is, I'm going to flip it back and say it hasn't changed. And okay, this is the problem. Trance is the genre that tends to get more stale than any other genre that I've seen out
there.
That's
interesting.
It's and when I say stale, I don't necessarily mean it. Yeah, I do mean it in a bad way to me anyway. But it's just guys that are making, so 90% of the guys that are making, okay, at least I'm going to speak based on 138 stuff. The progressive guys, I've got a really good thing going. And Juno Beats, all this kind of stuff, they're pushing really original sounds and ideas, and they embrace them. Mm-hmm. The 138 market, 90% of the people are kind of pigeonholed into this sound, and the guys are afraid to breaking out, to break out of that mold. They're afraid what awaits them out there, out of that comfort zone. Now, is that because of COVID? There was an explosion of templates being available on the internet, that they can just take the template and move some notes around and call the tracks their own tracks. It could be. There's just, as a label owner, I'm racking my brain every week when I'm listening to these demos that come in. And I'm like, today all the demos sounded the same. And there must have been a new template that's come out.
Wow, really? Wow.
It is kind of like that. Yeah. Wow. It's depressing. And it's actually a little bit frustrating as a label owner, because you don't want to release a track and then somebody else comes out with a track on another label that sounds almost identical because they use the same template to start with.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
So this is all where we are at.
All right. So you're a producer yourself. So what do you do to kind of go outside of that line and maybe do something different?
Most important thing is just start the track with an empty project. Okay. I'm not saying completely empty. Some people like to have a template in live set up to have their bus sends already set up. So there's a long reverb, a short reverb, a delay, all that stuff. But mine starts out with two audio tracks, two MIDI tracks, and nothing on the sends. And I just go. I've never reused a project, I don't think ever, even from back in Logic days. It's just, even though in Logic I did tend to sound similar sometimes, but that was just an accident. But now it's like, now I want to make a concept and go follow it. And so if I make some crazy sound on the modular, make sure I'm recording in live, because that stuff, you can't save presets, you can't save anything on the modular system. So if I make something cool, it's time to record, get it in, and then I can manipulate it with audio later, but it will never exist again. So it's important to always be recording, always see what you're doing, embrace a little bit of randomness sometimes, because the randomness can give you crazy ideas.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah. So we listened to your new release, Atomic EP.
Yeah.
It's 143 BPM, first of all.
It's wow. Awesome. It's awesome.
Banging. Holy moly, really. So we can hear like a combination of drum and bass, as well as flavors of, I would say, the 90s techno trance.
Yeah.
Is that all coming back?
I loved
now?
It.
I did a press write-up for someone today about this, and it was, you know, each track is looking back into a different generation of, you know, my clubbing New York days. So Prodigal is looking back to, actually that was not really necessarily my clubbing, that was a look back into my high school days where I had fallen in love with the Prodigy Experience album and just was like mind blown by what sounds could even exist in music. And so that was just a love letter, especially the breakdowns were a love letter to that, and then mixed with like a hard trance drop, set of drops. And then Feel Alive, that was kind of a different take on kind of the, at least what one of the sections of the leads was more like a Daft Punk kind of style with a more diva style vocal to kind of fill those gaps, while In a Day was, what was that based on? Oh yeah, that was very 90s sounding. You had like little Hoover sounds in there and stuff. Yeah.
Awesome. Love it.
No, it was so
lots
great.
Of 303s. Yeah.
Oh, totally. My goodness. So, you know, I noticed, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, vocals are not a frequent element to your music. And I wondered, you know, what's the reason, you know, what's your preference behind this?
I just get frustrated waiting for anything. So when I have to wait for vocals, no offense, Linnea.
No, I hear this a lot. Honestly, I do. From producers.
There's been a lot of times where I've waited so long for vocals that have never materialized and currently actually doing so right now. So if any of you are supposed to give me vocals, I am still waiting and I think of you every day.
That's on it.
Unhappy. Yeah. And and eventually a lot of these times I'm supposed to do a vocal tune, I just go ahead and finish it and release it as the instrumental and that's that. Mm. That kind of tends to be what it is. I do love working with vocals, to be honest, especially when you get great ones.
Yeah.
So what kind of vocals do you like?
Unique ones, just ones that either are, I don't like love songs and I don't like songs that don't rhyme either.
Okay.
Which is a lot in trance. It was surprising to me how many trance tracks don't rhyme. I'm not saying they always have to rhyme. And I'm not saying they have to follow the A-B-A-B structure or the A-A-B-B rhyme structure, but just a little bit of rhyming. I feel like that's like a thing for me.
All right. I would definitely say that I'm rhyming in every song that I write.
Yes,
like
good.
Normally, anyways. Very few occasions. And then I feel like that's wrong, but... you know, it still works, you know.
No,
rhyming doesn't have to literally end the same exact spelling of a word and pronunciation, but it just got to be close enough so that vibe, yeah. So that color's there. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. I'm with you. So, and probably you've kind of answered this, but I'll ask anyway. So as a producer, you know, when you think about vocals versus non-vocals, just, you know, for the crowd, if you will, you know, what do you feel about it? Which is best?
They both have their strengths. Okay, so let's take a look at, I could name two examples right now. Two instrumental tracks. Okay, it's not really fully instrumental. Let's look at Ferry Corsten, Punk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There is that voice that comes and says digital punk, but it's used more as a percussive element than anything else. It's not necessarily a song vocal. Yeah. But there is that, you know, the bass line, the way the lead is used. And it was very unique at the time. It was a sound that nobody really had heard before. And it's just, I think it's just a JP with one oscillator tuned 50 cents apart from the other one. But it sounds awesome and it sounds fat and it comes through. And the other example, the obvious elephant in the room, Darude Sandstorm, that patch, you know, for the lead of that. When that came out, no one ever heard a lead like that. And that didn't need a vocal. And that's like, that track has no vocals whatsoever. So... I feel the beat did, but Sandstorm didn't. So, and look how big of a hit Sandstorm is. This guy.
Huge. Legendary.
Yeah. Huge.
Absolutely.
Still making money on it. So
Yeah. Just need one hit. That's it.
Yeah. So it just goes to show you. And that track and that sound is just so easy to make. It's just two oscillators spaced out. I think either 17 or 14 semitones apart from each other. And that is it. And one's a square and one's a square and one's a saw. That is more or less it. Probably a bit of EQ and processing. But there's nothing too crazy about the sound. It, at its heart, it's a simple sound. Amazing that that's within everyone's reach.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that. Great answer.
Yeah, absolutely. So how has your approach to vocal production and collaboration evolved over the years?
I'm a bit interactive. If I don't, or I don't want to say if I don't like a specific phrase of a vocal. I mean, I go both methods where it's either the vocalist will have a pre-made kind of demo already, where it's playing to a piano, playing to a demo track that somebody contributed, or if the vocalist made their own demo, and then I can work from that as well. Or if I submit, you know, a half-finished track or a four-minute demo to the vocalist, and they write over that, and then they send back to me. And in that situation, I'll take the vocals, the dry ones, when I get them, and just lay them in and see how it's sitting. Play with them a little bit, put basic compression, delay, and reverb on them. See which way we're going with it. See if anything needs tuning or timing fixes. And then from there, I could probably go back and say, can you sing this note longer into, you know, past where the bar ends, or, you know, little things like that. But then it usually only needs one set of resings, and it's usually not for the whole track. And then I just go from there. I mean, Melodyne helps you make harmonies without going back and forth over email a million times. And you can create, because they're so low in volume, they don't need to be really resung, right?
Absolutely. All right.
Can I jump in a question here?
Of course.
Just thinking. Have you ever sort of done this where you're like doing video calling and doing writing and like this?
Only with other producers on a collab. So if we're doing engineering two people engineering the same track, then I've done it on video call to just not necessarily because we can't both touch the same project. I'm sure there's a screen sharing situation that I could do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at least so the other guy is always knowing, or I know what they're doing at all points. So if you get the project handed back to you, you know, it's like taking a piss break while you're playing a chess game, and then you're coming back, you're like, what'd you move?
I love that. Great. So what is your most successful vocal track that you think is like the most successful?
I think it would have to be, well, I mean, the Perfect World with Victoria did really well on FSOE. The most recent one with Carrie Anywhere, that which came out, I think, just I think 5-6 weeks ago, did really well. Yeah. And proudly, that was on Regen. So that was a really good way to start. And that was the new look of Regen as well. New logo, rebranding, all that. So that was beautiful to see that people were really into that. A lot of people were playing it. So that made me really, really happy. Carrie was happy. What else? There was the another one on FSOE called The World with Lo-Fi Sugar. That actually did quite well too. It's actually still doing very well on Spotify. There's a really great Darren Porter remix that's been done fantastic. What other ones? I think those were my top three.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, those are good ones. Definitely love also Victoria's voice. It's so deep and unique.
It's so, isn't it so different than what you picture comes out of that
underrated
mouth?
Seriously. I'm like,
incredible. What? Incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, super cool collab.
It's commanding voice.
Yeah, absolutely. So who is your favorite vocalist, and who would you really like to work with that you haven't worked?
I kind of want to do something with Christian Burns, but I keep going back with Black Hole about this, and there's just scheduling issues. I mean, Christian Burns is an extremely extremely busy vocalist. But after doing the two tracks with David Berkeley years ago, I really like working with male vocals, and they stand out of a set because, of course, no offense whatsoever, Linnea, it's most of the vocalists for trance are female.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Gid Sedgwick is another good example of a vocalist I didn't really like the tone of until the new Cosmic Gate single that's just come out recently. Mm. And then it's awesome. I can't remember the name of it, but Gid sounds awesome in the track.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, he just needed the right producer.
Yeah. Sometimes it's like that, you know, you just need the right producer.
Yeah, they nailed it. I mean, they nail everything they do, but it's... That was a really nice thing. I'm like, okay, so he's definitely on my list then, because if you produce it, you know what? What I'm noticing a lot of times, and I've kind of changed the way I worked, where I used to do 150 to 180 channel projects, and now I've kind of downsized, because that was just lunacy. Imagine going back and opening these projects years later, like, okay, where is this?
Oh, painful.
I know.
Yeah. So now I'm trying to keep it 60 or less, and that's even potentially on a vocal single. I think Anywhere even clocked in to 60 channels, and I was happy with that. It was like manageable, and I would like to get it even less. Giuseppe's a great minimal artist that gets more with less, and I think he switched over to that format once he started doing this. The go live concept, because the less channels he has up on stage, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Interesting, for sure. I'd love to hear a collab with you and Christian Burns.
That would be, that would be amazing. Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah. We nudge him, you know.
Nudge him.
Yeah.
So when you're collaborating, do you use a contract with your the people you're collaborating with, or do you prefer to just do verbal agreements?
I'm not in the business of screwing people over. So it's usually a verbal agreement with me. If somebody requires paperwork, I'll absolutely write it up for them.
Right.
But no one's ever been screwed over. Usually the vocal tracks that I do on as an original are going out through Black Hole, and everybody knows that Black Hole is the most fair distributor slash label on the planet.
100%. Yeah. I love them. I think
Arnie's not messing with anybody. No, it is no, it is amazing.
He's awesome. Yeah. He is awesome. Have you had any bad experiences over the time you've been working when you've not had contracts? Have you had bad experiences? And obviously not mentioning any names, but
I guess the worst experiences are the ones where you always build yourself up for something big to happen, and then nothing happens. Yeah. And that can happen all the time too. There was a recent situation too where I kind of did a project out of respect and pride for one of my heroes, and it completely blew up in my face. And they say never meet your heroes, and I actually still haven't met. Well, I kind of met him, but it the thing just blew up in my face. It was the wrong thing to do. Not really the wrong thing to do. It just didn't go the way I actually envisioned, and it was due to one small bad move that I had made in the implementation of it, but it was an overreaction from the other side, to say the least.
Oh man.
it could still end up fine. I had to apologize, which is weird, but yeah. So there's those situations that, you know what? When you get so excited about something, the rule is sleep on it and don't act on anything, whether you're excited in a negative way or a positive way. And I was excited in a positive way, and I acted and did something, and woof, should have slept on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you never know how. You know, it could be that they got really excited too. You know, you never know. You never
they
know.
Did.
So
I they think
it's
not.
A person to person. Yeah, yeah. You know, definitely person to person. So I don't think, I think it's just unique situation.
Yeah. Every artist, label, distributor that you deal with does things differently. And it's impossible to apply one rule to all of them. So it's probably important to always speak to your peers and see if anybody has an experience with a particular person before you start doing anything.
Yeah, that's good advice.
It will solve a lot of problems.
Absolutely good advice.
Yeah, great. All right, so can you tell us about any upcoming maybe vocal collaborations that you're working on?
Well, I guess I can say this, but I won't say the vocalist, but I had almost a 2-hour phone call with Raz Nitzan last week, and it was amazing. And it was the first time I've ever spoken to Raz direct in my life.
All right.
and we got along great, and I really like where this guy's coming from. I like what he stands for. I'm going to ride him a little bit on terms of getting him to rhyme, because he doesn't like to write rhymes, does he?
All right.
but it's okay. We're going to work together, and what a person that truly believes in just making great music. And I just had no idea. So
yeah.
He's got really good energy. Together. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for those who doesn't know who Raz is, he actually helped actually put together one of the biggest songs of Armin van Buuren, you know.
Of course. So, Shivers.
Susanna, exactly. So yeah, there you go. All right.
Well, you got Shivers, you got Sound of Goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, there's the list.
Raz has a decent little CV.
Yeah, absolutely.
Legendary, for sure. All right. So you've released music on some of the most respected labels out there in the industry, including Armada, Bandits, and Black Hole Recordings. How do you choose the right label for your track? What are the factors that you consider when making that decision?
I just see what it sounds like at the end and see, okay, where is this Lego piece going to fit appropriately? And also I do keep in mind, I'm like, which label is going to be able to get it out the quickest? There's nothing worse than when a label releases a tune that you technically finished 12 months ago and you have moved on from that technique, from that sound, from that style. And that's just, it's frustrating. So I try to get, you know, if I'm going to release with another label that's not Regen or Degen, these days, I'm keeping release schedule in mind that I can get it out within, at the longest term, 5-6 months, not 12.
Yeah. Okay. Great.
So, because we were doing obviously some background on you before this, so we noticed that you had Titanium Records. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah? Yes.
And then we saw obviously Regen, and we're like, I wonder which label is his, or are they all yours?
Yeah. Yes? Tell us about that.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Well, that whole branding, the Titanium Recordings, yeah. Titanium podcast, and just that whole brand was, I don't even know the years, but that was my first label. It was Titanium with a T-I, how cute. Mm. And the concept of that was just kind of, I just liked the word, and I figured I can tie it in with the name, play on words, and just release stuff. And I always do my own logo designs and things like that. And then actually, a funny Easter egg is the cover of the Atomic EP that we're talking about.
All
is
right.
Actually an AI rendering of a titanium molecule. But most people are not going to realize that.
Yeah, no, it didn't
it's
realize
an abstract that. Rendering that AI does of a titanium molecule. I was like, that's a nice little Easter egg. So, but not like anybody's going to realize that, but just to let you know what it is. But and then I decided to stop doing a label. So for a while, I didn't do a label at all. Mm. And then Degenerate was launched, and it was just, it was kind of, it started off dark stuff and then kind of got more melodic. And then I just kind of felt it had reached a point where it was like a normal trance label. So I'm like, that just needs to get rebranded. And I had sat down with Activa, who was part of the Regenerate rebranding. Okay. And he's like, well, we should rename it. And cause it's not really degenerate type of music anymore. I'm like, you're right. Yeah. And I'm like, what about regenerate? Because it's like, but I just hate how the words end differently. Cause they don't rhyme. See, we're going right back to the rhyming.
Yeah.
Words don't rhyme. So I'm actually like very close to, in the next couple of years, I'm just going to call them Regen and Degen and call it be done with it.
Right.
Much easier.
What inspired you to actually start a label in the first place?
It's just nice to be able to bring up guys that are having trouble either releasing somewhere else, or it's nice to work with such an eager bunch. Regenerate primarily releases a lot of new names, and it's just so nice to be able to work with them, push them to be working a little bit harder. During COVID, I was doing a lot of teaching as well. So, you know, it's nice to see these lessons kind of put into usage and be happy enough with their product that I want to release it on Regen. It generates some income. It's nice to unite people. I like to do graphics, and it's a good excuse to be doing graphics as well.
Right.
If I'm releasing on other labels, I don't get to do my own graphics. Not all the time. Yeah. I mean, though Armada let me do my Arc Sun Arisen remix graphic, which was nice of them. So cool. Every once in a while you get to do it.
Yeah.
on that topic, because you mentioned that you went to art school, so say a little bit more about that.
That was my, as a kid, since I was a kid, I either wanted to work for a comic book company, an anime, doing Japanese animation, or just some type of thing where I could be with a pencil and a pad and just drawing pictures all day. Little did I know, as I was going, I was in art school, but art school was awesome. It just drew naked people all day. That was
the
it.
The benefits.
That must have been terrible for you, Sean.
Terrible. I hate it. No, trust me, they were not always attractive. You had to be able to draw. You had to draw bad and good. But at the end of that, and during that stay in college, I was like, I had gotten into music, and I'm like, you know, when I, at the end of like around graduation time, you know, your parents come and they check out your final art show and stuff like that. And you literally look at your pictures, and the reaction is like, they look and they're like, this is nice. It's really nice. But your art form when you make music is people are literally moving to it.
Right.
And I'm like, I like this art form a little better. It has more of an effect, and you can, it's a much more palpable effect than somebody staring at a piece of still art. Of course, you know, I wanted to go into computer graphics and things like that, but I just thought, I can make the music now. Let's just do this now.
Have you ever thought about bringing your like art into your music, like maybe your music shows, make something out of it?
The problem is my art isn't animation. I can't do animation. That would be awesome. That would have been an awesome skill to learn.
Yeah.
Before I had more responsibilities in life.
Yeah.
And now that we have to deal with this very tight 24-hour bracket per day, I think that's off the schedule for me for learning video editing. No, like 3D animation, I should say. Video editing I have to do. But at the very least, you know, there's all sorts of cool toys and stuff like that. I'm happy with these toys now. This is going to be a whole new rabbit hole on its own. So
yeah. All right. Great. And just curious, going back to your label overall, so how do you decide which artists and tracks that get signed overall?
That's a hard one. Really, you'll know. Yeah, honestly, when you listen to a demo, there's almost like two or three phases of listening to the demo. There's the first 5 seconds where you know if you're going to delete it or not.
Yeah, right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No offense to anybody.
No offense. Response, yeah, it is really important. Yeah.
You know it real quick if it's just a quick delete. And then the next step is listening a bit more to see, okay, this person's got it going. There's a groove here. There's a drive here. And then, while you're listening, within a minute or 2 minutes, you know you know if you're going to have to go back to the person to say, okay, can you get your bass line a little louder? Can you get certain elements to be a bit more prominent? And then you get to the main theme, the main riff, the main melody of the track, or the main vocal, whatever. Then you know if that's a taker.
Yeah,
right.
And this is also usually the make or break point.
Yeah.
And you know, is it close enough that if he nudges a couple of notes, is he or she close enough that he's going to nudge it over that precipice? Or do we have to pull the plug in this project? Or do we have to pull the plug? Because if we don't, this would be a time bandit and everyone's going to waste a load of time and not get it to the finish line. I'm trying to make my time as efficient as possible. And I know it's probably going to piss some people off, but you know, we all have to do a million other things in a day in addition to be parents and stuff like that. So sometimes it's tough to manage everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So I like the way that you're talking about, like, you know, you're listening to the process. Could it, like, the baseline be a little bit better? Are you the kind of label that would go back to a person, say, maybe you can change this and that and come back to me?
I will always go. If I see potential, I will always try to fish that potential out of the project.
Yeah.
And there's other times where the melody's just not for me at all. But there's been times that there's been guys I've written back before where the melody's not for me at all. And there's nothing you could do to change. You could change everything about the track, but the track is produced really well. I'll write back just to give him a second wind and say, yo, really like the production, or give him or her, I'm sorry. Really like the production, but this particular track's just not for me. Keep on sending it to us. Keep on sending new stuff to us.
That's really cool.
Yeah, that's very good. Cool. I love that. I do the same for my label.
It's the best thing you can do. Because you know what? Saying bad news back to people or no news back to people is also depressing for us.
Yeah, it sucks. It really sucks.
Yeah.
Definitely. I know that feeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So are you looking to sign new artists on the label right now?
Always.
For those
always
who are listening. All right. So for those who are listening, where can they actually send their demos to?
Okay, so it's really easy. demos4regenerate@gmail.com. We were using my oshuantiasmusic.com name, but apparently that domain name gets kind of stuck in junk mail sometimes, so it's just easier to use a Gmail account, which goes through every time.
Yeah.
All right. Replies.
Okay, great.
Okay, so if you could describe your music using a food analogy, what would it be and why?
Ah, okay. It's like Thai food, really spicy and really tasty.
Nice.
Not very sweet.
I love that. I like Thai food, so, and I like your music too. So. Good combination.
So, would you rather remix Baby Shark or Susan Boyle?
I don't know who Baby Shark is, so I don't know who to compare it. So I, oh, is that a travesty?
Baby Shark.
You know what? In all fairness, I would remix that because my daughter, I would be a hero in the household. My daughter's learning that on the piano right now.
Oh, amazing.
I should learn that on the piano so I can.
Yeah, father-daughter session there.
We want to hear it. It started here, folks.
That is so funny. Wow. Okay.
All right. I have one for you.
Okay.
Would you rather fight one horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses?
I'd rather fight the one horse-sized duck.
Less to deal with. A giant duck.
Yeah.
Great.
Okay.
It's so soft. I'm sure it would be just as soft. You could just punch him in the belly.
Yeah. And then go.
And if aliens landed on Earth and asked you to play them one of your tracks to represent humanity, which one would you choose?
Oh my God, that's a tough one. I would probably be too busy trying to get into their spaceship to give to pitch. I want to see that.
Me too. Me, I'd be there.
Let me in. Okay, so I have to pick a tune. Probably go with my tune "Now You See," which is instrumental, or maybe even my last year's remix of "Zahi" that I did originally with Bjorn Akerson.
Very cool.
Is I still to this day, Zahi is, I think, one of my favorite melodies. Yeah.
Great. Good answer.
So also we were speaking to Kieran McCauley a few weeks back, and we were talking to him about mental health being non-existent pretty much in the music industry. And what do you do to take care of your mental health?
Actually, I have a really good answer for that. I go to the gym literally every day.
Very cool. That's what Kieran was saying as well. Yeah.
It's the best. And anybody that comes to me and say that, like, I get a lot of guys that come to me and say, I'm just kind of down on my luck this week, or I'm not having a good week. And I say, just put some headphones in, put a playlist in on Spotify you've never listened to before, and potentially, ideally, a genre that you don't listen to. And go for a run. It doesn't matter if you go for a run for 30 minutes or an hour, or go for a walk, but just get some tunes on you've never heard before and zone out. And then put your phone in your pocket and don't look at it. Don't go on WhatsApp. Don't go on iMessage. Just cut yourself off from the world. And that's what I do at the gym. I mean, it's my excuse to listen to third-party music or news, which is actually, that's kind of depressing too lately. So I try not to do that too much.
It sure is.
Oh, God.
Sure is.
But that's my solution, really. And I wake up every morning at 5:15 in the morning. I eat 3 apples, drink a lot of water, go to the gym, and I come back and I'm ready for the day as the kids are waking up. So it's nice.
Right. Wait. I want to just go back. You eat 3 apples. Why 3 apples?
It's my regiment. I don't know.
All right. So that's your breakfast, like every day.
No, I come back and I have eggs and bacon and the greasy stuff. But the apples is kind of like, this is just what works for me. It's probably wrong. I'm not a nutritionist and probably doing things in the wrong order, but it works. And I haven't gotten sick since I started doing this in the last year.
Is that your theory then? If you take the apples, it's going to help boost your immune system. Is that the idea?
You know, they say an apple a day keeps the doctor away. Three has got to do something.
He's got to be good.
Maybe I should do that. I'm going to try.
Apples for me are just the easiest, most immediate fruit. Bananas you have to peel. Kiwis are like a pain in the ass with the scooping. Avocado, don't even get me started. Is avocado even a fruit? I don't even know. And it's just like strawberries go bad so fast. You know, all that shit is like just annoying. Apples is like, you buy a big bag of apples that last you a while, not very long in this house, but you know.
Yeah.
Right. Are you pretty disciplined then, generally?
No, I'm like the worst discipline ever.
Really?
Well, it depends if I like something and I'm into it or not. I'm really extreme person. I mean, that's why I go to the gym every day. It's not like I can never go to the gym 3 days a week. I would just never go.
Yeah.
I have to go every day. And I feel guilty if I don't go. And the rule is, it's 100 push-ups that day if I cannot make it. So if I'm traveling, for example, that's it. First thing in the hotel room, 100 push-ups.
Wow. Okay. Good for you.
Just so I could feel like I did something.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
I like it.
Not in one shot, by the way, in sets, but.
Yeah. I'd like to see that on the stage, you know.
Oh, my God.
They have time to go to the hotel, so you have to do it on the stage.
Life DJ goals, hashtag.
Yeah, definitely. So when you're not producing and flying all over the world like a superstar DJ, how do you like to spend your free time?
Here in the studio a little bit of quality family time?
Do you have any hobbies or interests that people might be surprised about? You
know? Gaming.
Gaming, okay.
What games?
So the latest game I'm playing right now is the Metroid Prime remastered on Switch. I pretty much all play Switch. The reason I pretty much play mainly Switch is because you can take it with you when you go away.
Nice.
That aspect when Nintendo released this system was absolutely brilliant. I'm like, this is like, for anybody who travels, this is the best thing ever. And I've hacked the dock, so the dock is not this big anymore. It's like you can buy a little casing and you put all the PCB, in there, and it fits in this little thing. And I can hook it up to any hotel TV in 2 seconds. So it's pretty nice to be able to have the Switch with you. And you got Zelda coming out in like, I think it's like 40 days now, maybe even less.
Yeah, the new one, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So it's exciting to be a Switch gamer. But I do think this is the swan song for the Switch, and we're potentially really close to the next gen system soon.
What does that do for you in terms of, you know, does it allow you to relax or?
No, it probably stresses me out even more. My other favorite game is Doom Eternal and Monster Hunter Rise. So these are not stress-free games. They're very stressful games. So it probably does the other thing, but at least it lets me escape for a little bit. And that's kind of the point. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. So what's next for Sean Tyus?
Up next, we got I guess it'll be, this interview will be up after the release of Atomic EP, but and then up next, a little bit later in the month, will be a remix actually on another label. It'll be over on Nocturnal Nights, and I've done a remix as Abstract again for an old kind of underdog classic, Solid Haze and Miles Reduxed.
Okay.
Wow. Also instrumental.
Wow, so you've been working really in this studio. Yeah, loads of things coming.
Crazy. Right? Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, even after that, in May, when we kick off May, one of my favorite tunes ever that I've remixed for In Trance We Trust, and it's like kind of in between. It's not a 140 banger, but it's not quite progressive. So it's a nice 134 kind of sexy, chunky beat version of Midway Amazon.
I'm intrigued. We're kind of winding up, but I just really intrigued. What's been your highest point in your career so far?
None. It's been an uphill battle so far. It's the best way to say. I never want to reach a peak. I never want to reach something that I would look back and say that's my high point. Maybe the high point would be like when Armin was doing the Imagine album, and I got my chance to do Intricacy with him. That's pretty cool.
That sounds really cool.
Because he doesn't. To be invited to do a collab for an Armin van Buuren album, especially back in the, I think this was 2008. That was like, geez, that was insane.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow.
I was 28. I'm like, oh my God, this is like surreal. It's very, very cool. A big privilege to be able to do that. Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. You are a good producer, so
absolutely. Yeah. So with that in mind, are there any tips that you'd like to share with, you know, up and coming young producers?
Break the rules that you have already kind of been taught. Like, that's the best thing you could do. Break the rules. I know it's so vague, and they're like, oh, what rules should we break? But break them all. Okay, don't make a song that you can't play in a DJ set with other people's tracks, but try to just really always say, okay, cool. So if everyone's leads sound like this, I can evolve that concept by contributing or taking away this factor. And then this is definitely, this is now my territory, but it still keeps up with the other sounds. And that's such a generalizing statement, but that can work, you know, for the, a lot of people layer too many leads. So what do you do to fight that? Just use one or just use two. And then you'll hear much more. And by it's almost counterintuitive that using less is actually means more detail. You will actually hear more detail. So that's the cool thing. I always tell people, you know what? That's the other tip. Then use less elements to create single sounds. It's okay to layer, but don't use seven layers to make one sound. Use two or three, and it will sound much better.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. Good advice.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, and also, obviously, you're from the US, but you live in Switzerland. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What took you to Switzerland? If you don't mind me asking.
And back in 2004, I was still living in New York, and I was, but by that point I had been doing a couple of years or maybe a year, I think about a year of on and off kind of contract work with this dude, Beam, in Germany, in Cologne, Germany. Yeah. His real name was Michael Orgach. Mm-hmm. And I did a couple of remixes, just a couple of just paid contract work for him. And one morning I wake up and he's like, "You want to come to Germany to work in this studio?" And I'm like, I had nothing going for me, really. I think I was delivering pizza at the time in New York for cash. So I'm like, you know what? Yeah, I'll come. But hold on, because I got to get a passport first, because I hadn't even been out of the country yet.
Wow.
So got the passport sorted. And October 1st, 2004, I was in Germany starting to do that life. And I'd moved alone. I didn't speak German. It was a tough life experience, but good one, because you get this discipline where, like, after that point, everything's easy. Mm. And then eventually, I switched over to a Swiss studio, and then kind of continued on. Yeah.
Wow. And do you miss the U.S.?
Of course, of course. My friends and family, so many. I mean, I have so many friends here, but my friends and family that I grew up with, that I went to high school with, are all back there. My brothers are there. And I miss it. I always miss it. I miss it every day. My parents have now retired down to near Daytona Beach in Florida. So it makes them a pleasure to visit.
Yeah.
And it's I love getting back over there, whether I'm alone to visit people, to do gigs, to take my own family there. I absolutely love it for all those reasons.
I'm curious. Are you fluent in German then, though?
I wouldn't say fluent. Let's call it functional.
Okay.
That's very cool.
I have my good, I guess, like anybody speaking a third, you know, a non-mother tongue language, it's like you have your good days and you have your bad days.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right? Totally. Yeah. I totally agree.
So obviously you were mentioning, you know, that your studio was your COVID project. What was your COVID experience like, and how did you manage it within the industry?
I had a good answer, because there was a lot of things that I had to do, like en masse, that I hadn't done before. I mean, I had always done kind of one-on-one teachings. I did it through a website. I can't remember the name of the website. Shit. But I had done before COVID teaching people over Zoom. And it was like 2-hour sessions, and just, you know, they do the thing. But then during COVID, I kind of adapted that concept and switched it, because I did notice that Zoom let multiple people watch you.
Right.
And I started doing these weekend workshops, and a different topic per workshop. And it was like, you know, by the last one, I was doing one workshop live for 35 people a pop. And that was really cool.
Wow, that's
it was
great.
Really, really cool. And then also during that time, the label was still releasing music, still working on the label, brought David Elston in, who's been absolutely instrumental and angelic in terms of making things really much more professional and organized with the label as well. He's done all the animations, great. And plus the DJing never stopped during COVID. I finally took to Twitch, learned how to stream, you know, started out with the little DJ, XDJ RR. And after 3 months of using that thing, I was like, nope. And then I just took the money that I made from Twitch and reinvested it and got the XDJ XZ, which has been the best practice piece to be on because it's an all-in-one unit, but it's exactly the same pretty much as what you find in all the clubs. So my DJing practice and my comfort but in the DJ booth went up so exponentially where I never had decks at home before, not since I've been to Europe.
Okay.
So you are like super proactive, my goodness. Yeah.
I'm hyperactive. It's probably a fault to a fault.
Are you? Is that how you see yourself? Hyperactive?
Potentially, yes. Yes.
All right.
Good way of spending time.
You walk in here and you see the cables on the floor, you're going to go, yeah.
You know what? Mine is looking the same. My brother's is looking the same. So you're not alone. I'm really jealous about all your synths in the background. I'm like, yeah.
I know. It's fun. The top two are just the two classics, the JP and the Supernova 2. Not much analog there. This one I need to still work on. This is like a build your own. It's just a case with a keyboard and you put your own modules in it and you build your own synth. It's cool.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you so very much for
it's been a pleasure. This has been so nice. It was an hour. I just looked at the clock. I'm like, an hour went by that
quickly. I know.
That's so quick. Yeah.
We've loved having you with us.
Thank you.
And you know, we hope that listeners out there have enjoyed it too and keep up the amazing work and you've got stuff coming out, so really good luck with that.
Thank you
and everybody buy it, go and check
it
out.
Yes, everybody go grab it, buy it.
Yeah, absolutely,
legend.
And thank you everybody.
a real pleasure to meet you.
You guys are amazing. This has been so much fun. Thank you
so much. And yeah, thank you all for tuning in to this episode of Love Vocals Nation with Sean Tyers. We hope you enjoyed this insightful and inspiring conversation with one of the most talented producers in the trance music scene. And if you want to learn more about Sean and his music, be sure to check out his social media pages and websites. And if you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, leave a review, and let us know what you think. And don't forget to make your own suggestions on what kind of guest we should bring on the show. We'll be back soon with more exciting interviews and discussions about the music that we love. Until then, keep dancing and keep spreading the love.
Spreading the love.